Hey there, boys, girls, and flying squirrels. My name's Joe Keyport, and you're listening to the Ear Coffee Podcast. For this week's episode, I sat down with Sarah and Jake Larson of Seavers. This band released one of my favorite singles of 2018, which is the song The Wolves. The single is this song of hope in the middle of struggle that is set to an anthemic instrumental. Seavers push the track to the edge before pulling back and just fading into nothing. The band are able to pull from this endless amount of ideas to create exceptionally impactful songs. Their debut record, The Weight and the Sound, is designed not to only discuss heavy moments in our lives, but also that moment when those periods finally break. Sarah explains that they wanted to create a sound that reflects the feeling of a weight being lifted off you.
I feel like that song was kind of the picture for us because it has the both and. It has that front half is all about the heaviness that you feel. So kind of like the weight is what that picture is of, like, just there's brokenness in life, brokenness within ourselves and processing those things and some heaviness. And then the end of the song really lifts in hope of being restored and having light enter into those situations. And kind of the cacophony of sound that is happening there is the picture of what that sound is. So the weight and the sound part being kind of this, like, lifting in a intangible way. So there's not like the direct, like, this is what's happening, this is why I'm feeling better. But there's something beautiful about music that just kind of can emulate emotion.
On top of the music talk, we also discussed the process of learning how to write together as a duo. Husband and wife songwriting teams are interesting to me because the relationship between the two are more than just your typical band members. Songwriters and creative people in general are more sensitive than your average person, and writing songs can be this raw and open process. Seavers started after Sarah and Jake got married, so they weren't just figuring out their dynamic as songwriters and as fellow musicians, they were also figuring out the dynamic of their marriage. Here is Sarah and Jake Larson of the band Seavers on the Ear Copy Podcast.
I'm sitting here with Sarah and Jake Larson, the duo, or the husband and wife duo behind Seavers. How are you guys today?
Good. Doing well.
Yes. Long weekend, but good things.
You guys played a show last night.
Yes.
How'd that show go?
It was good. Yeah. We were opening for Jillian Jones, who's a friend of ours. We have the same producer, so met through him.
Okay.
So she was doing a CD release in Mankato, and so we did an opening act for her. Just our acoustic stuff, which was fun. It's fun sometimes to just get to, like, dial it back and have a more simple setup. So
yeah, and then we were able to, like, hop on and be a part of her band. So
oh, that's cool.
Some background vocals, and I played some guitar and helped with some tracks and all that stuff. So it was fun.
How often do you guys serve as, like, a backing band for other people at times, or is this kind of like a whenever people ask kind of thing?
Great question. Yeah. So we kind of, just because we worked in the same studio, our producer was like, "Hey, you should talk to Jill about doing some co-working on just like music together." And this was the album release show for her project, and then we're like talking about some potential touring opportunities and maybe trying to take it on the road in a smaller format where we could do some stuff as like the three of us. So
but it was really like one of our first times of being a part of a backing band group doing stuff for them. Jake's done a little bit more as a guitar player. There's usually a little bit more demand for that than for vocals. But so I think there's a couple more projects and things that you might be a part of upcoming. But
yeah.
So it was fun. It was a newer experience for us. It was cool.
That's really cool. Who's your producer?
Aaron Ankrum.
Yeah. Okay.
Who I believe is an alum of Northwestern.
Yes,
so.
He is. Shout out. But yeah, he's in the band Gray Shot.
Okay.
He's like the front man. And then he does a ton of producing for local bands and commercial audio, but Aerial View Studios is like his.
And that's the studio you used to produce, or you made your new your upcoming record, your debut, I should say.
Yep.
I saw when I was looking through liner notes on The Wolves that Ben Noble co-produced that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Is he also a co-producer on this new on your debut as well? Or
yeah. He jumped in. I think more like in the back half. It was when him and Aaron started partnering together, and so we're good friends with Ben and really love his sound and his style. So it's really fun to have his voice be a part of it too. The combination of him and Aaron is just awesome. Really great. The balance of creativity and ideas, and they're funny guys. So days in the studio with them is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So with Ben, he like. He met Aaron from like doing his own record, and then we started our process after his was like coming out and had been released. And then since then, he's taken kind of a producer role with a few. So our band, he helped us with a couple of tracks. So the one we released yesterday, he helped a lot with that one. Mm-hmm. And then he just did, I think R Burn is another local Minneapolis band that he did some mixing and producing on that. And they've got some, like, a new record coming out too soon, which is cool to see. Yeah.
It's really cool. But before we get too ahead of ourselves, I just want to get a little background information on Seavers, because has this always, did this start when you guys got married, or did you, or is this like a thing you were working on before that? Because I know when we, because we, The Remnant, when I was a part of The Remnant, did a concert that you guys headlined, and I know you mentioned that, Jake, for sure, you played in other bands before that.
Yep.
Sarah, did you also do musical stuff on your own? Or
I did. I was a part of like worship stuff, and so sang at churches, and just always loved singing. But I had never really seen it as an option outside of like church and doing things with that. And so when we started dating and then eventually got married, I was more focused on that, just seeing it as an the option. And honestly, didn't think Jake would want to do music with me. I didn't think I was good enough. And so then it was when we were married, maybe like a year or two into it, Jake had kind of been pursuing some stuff. And then was like, man, this is silly. Like, I just want to do it with you. Like, if we're together, you sing. Like, let's do this. Right. And so,
yeah, we were in an interesting season, like having just graduated from school. And I was in a band in college called The Fairlead, which is like a post-rock, like ambient stuff that we did. And that was coming to an end. And I was helping out a friend with a band called Apollos. I don't know if you know them.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, they're another Minneapolis thing. I was playing guitar with them. But at the time, we were kind of processing, like, what would music be for us? And, like, do I want to just do, like, the guitar, like, be a part of a band and then, like, do the side man gig thing? But I felt like doing it more as an artist and less as a support of someone else's work would be more fulfilling for me personally. And so we started that dialogue and process and just like writing songs together. And I think, I don't know, how many years are we into marriage at that point?
I feel like it was like 2 years in or so. Yeah. And so the start of it was messy a little bit too, because Jake was like all in and I'm like, I don't know if I'm any good at writing music. Like, I had done some like in high school, but it was all like teenage angst processing, like, this boy doesn't like me. And so I wasn't sure how it would go. And so there was a lot of just relational dynamics of us learning to like trust each other and actually like share fully more on my end, my voice, and trust that you would be cool with it or that we could make something work. So I think it was probably about like 3 years ago that we started trying to do music together and stuff, and it just took a little bit of time. And so then Seavers eventually came out of that. We liked the name pretty much from the beginning. So that's Jake's middle name and a family name. Was where that idea came from. So we're like, we like the name. That sounds cool. Now we just got to figure out like what the music sound, we would play.
What are we going to do?
Because you list a lot of like diverse acts as your like This Will Destroy You and like S. Carrie and just a massive thing. And it, you do a really good job of putting that all into the music, which is weird because you'll hear like post-rock and like indie folk, like two very opposite.
Right.
Yeah, but it works. How is it writing as a husband and wife duo? Just because, like, you said you started as a, like, almost not right away as a, when you got married, but you're still processing, like, how the dynamic of the relationship will work.
And then each other out,
And then you have the sensitivity that comes around creating something. How did that
work? Perfect word for it. Yeah, lots of sensitivity was how it started for us, at least. We just, even in our relationship in general, are pretty dynamic couple, I think, as far as emotional volatility or whatever. So there's a lot of there was a lot of figuring out like when someone would present an idea, how to tactfully develop the idea without making the other person feel you hate the idea or it's not good enough or their idea would be better. And we navigated a lot of that when we first started. And so most of our first earliest writing sessions usually ended with me being in tears. It just being like, we could never make this work. This is impossible. But eventually, just over time, like, we just continued to fight through those moments. And it really, really forced us to early on in the process be like, do we want to do this? Because I think it would be awesome if we could say it came naturally. But it doesn't. No, it doesn't, I mean, for us.
It's definitely been years. Like, the first couple years of trying to do this was just like, you'd have glimpses of light of like, hey, this session was awesome. And then like, you know, maybe five or six tries before that where you're just like, why are we doing this? This is so frustrating. I don't know why we don't can't just like make everything happen. But like, we just committed to putting some material out. And so like, that decision, I think we just like worked through some things. And obviously being married, like everything becomes personal because you're like supposed to be your spouse's biggest fan and all that. And you want to be, but you also have to, like, you can be their biggest critic in a lot of ways because they take things more personally because you know them so well. So like for me, learning to be tactful with how to say things and also putting boundaries on like knowing expectations of like when to be critical and when to not. Like just agreeing together about like, this is a time where we're not gonna like think about anything and attack it or like pull anything out. We're just gonna throw ideas out there, and then once we've got enough ideas just like out into the world, we're gonna piece them together, and then we can collectively create and then collectively criticize, I think. Is always a better way to do it than clashing. So
I think, I can't remember, it might have been Ben Noble even who talked to us about separating the creative process from the editing process. And so especially Jake is more wired to be the developer and the editor and those things. I'm usually like, yeah, feels good enough, that's fine. But Jake has a streak of perfectionism in him like, as we're writing, he has a tendency, or especially early on, of like, it's not good enough yet, even just as we're getting the idea out. So that was a big help for us to learn, like, get the idea out, let it be messy, let it be incomplete, let it be even unclear of where it's exactly going. And then afterwards, bringing in that editing process where we could be a little bit more critical. That ended up helping us a good amount, I think. So.
So then in May of 2017, you put out an EP, which was the
Alfon, yes.
Okay, Sessions.
Yes.
And then one of those was the song, The One That Got Away, which you then re-released as the single for your Kickstarter campaign. So how important is crowdfunding when it comes to indie bands? Because like, you see a lot of like people use like crowdfunding at this point, but it's something that people, a lot of people overlook or don't think about it. So how important is it to you guys as creating the new record or the debut record?
I'll start, man. I don't think we could do what we're doing right now if we didn't have that Kickstarter just for like studio time and like anything that you want to do well costs money, and like just getting a little bit of capital funding, like it's a small business. So like if you don't have the funds to make the material that you're trying to eventually sell with your product, like the more you have invested at the beginning, the easier it is to just like go out and buy gear, whether it's buying microphones for yourself or paying for an engineer or for some musicians to come and help bring your songs to another level. I think it's just, and then also, not only just the financial side of like having the ease of that, just a little boost to push you to the next level, but also just like bringing more people into the process, and like they're invested in you as an artist and as like a person. It's been really rewarding to like bring like our friends and family and people that like really love us and know us into that a little deeper than, like, when you put your money into something, you're kind of putting your heart and soul into it a little more.
It's a different level of commitment for sure.
I don't know what you say.
Yeah, I think another tough thing that we constantly revisit is the idea of doing music as a living when currently the state that we're in, it doesn't provide a lot of income. So the reality is you either need to work full time to fund your project, but then you don't have the time to do the project, or you try and create the time to do the project, and then you don't have the money to do the project. And some people have amazing capacities, and I feel like find the way to make both work, where they're working full time and doing their project, and it's great. The way that we work, and we tried doing that, and just found like we can't accomplish what we want to if we are committed 100% all of our time somewhere else. And so our life is a lot of piecing things together and trying to make ends meet with that. And so then it's humbling. We would personally way rather, I think, at least initially, just be able to pay for it ourselves. It's a big ask to be like, hey, do you believe in us enough to like give us some money for this? But man, after we saw like the response that people had, and not just like a sure, we'll support you, but almost like a, oh, I'm glad you're finally asking because we want to support mm-hmm. you, from people who really care about you and believe in your music and the things that you want to say through that. We had some people that just really, really, not just financially, just rallied around us in every way possible, telling us that they believe in us. And mm-hmm. it made us even feel more committed to our project, to be like, other people care about this than just us. Like, this isn't no longer just a, like, let's have fun and make a record. It's like, people are banked on this. Like, right. they yeah. cashed in on this project. So
yeah.
it's a cool, it even kind of throws back a little bit to like old school, back when like artists had like patrons, like mm-hmm. people sponsoring them to create art, commissioning them to create art. It's this cool community concept, I think, of drawing people into it and having them have ownership that just expands, I think, what art even means to people. So yeah. it is cool. It's very important. It's humbling, but it's a cool thing to be able to have people committed in that way.
So the single, again, the single I mentioned was The One That Got Away, which is this very, it's just this incredibly, incredibly raw and real depiction of mm-hmm. grief. And you mentioned that, Jake, you have a very you're a perfectionist when it comes to writing. And you almost, you told a story when you played that show that you almost got rid of that song. It mm-hmm. didn't make it.
Yeah.
It almost didn't make the cut. You want to kind of tell that story?
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Man, just having high standards for yourself and looking at the world around you, you see so many other people doing really, really cool things, and it's hard to feel like looking in the mirror that your stuff will measure up. I was like in the season of writing, and I was sitting down on the couch with an acoustic guitar. I had just had a notebook and was playing. I think it was Later at Night, You Had Gone to Bed, or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a lot where like some of our cool songs mm-hmm. happen.
When I'm asleep.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just sitting on this like classic C chord going back and forth. And I wrote this like The One That Got Away, which to me is a very like cheesy lyric. and I like that initial was like, I got this melody and this lyric. Probably gonna be a pop song. I should just toss this. This isn't the right direction we want to go. But like, yeah. And then I got a little bit further down in the writing process, and I just like put the notebook away and went to bed. So I was like half finished. Mm-hmm. And then I showed it to Sarah the next day, and it was just like sparks. So like that.
Oh, I just started crying from what you had shared, because it was just a super personal. The context of the song is so personal to me. And so it felt like what Jake had written perfectly put voice to things that I had been feeling.
To cut in here quickly, during an interview that was done at a concert in November of 2017, Sarah and Jake go into some extra details about the song The One That Got Away. After this interview is over and you're interested in a little more info, you can go to the Ear Coffee Podcast episode 9, and around the 8.5 minute mark, they talk about the season they were going through in a little more detail.
Which I feel like that validation you needed, because you're like, I don't know, like I wrote this, it's probably dumb, and I'm sitting there bawling like, no, it's not dumb, it's beautiful, it's perfect. Yeah, so then we sat down and kind of fleshed out the rest of the song together, and I still like really vividly remember that writing process, because it was one of our first really successful times writing together, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of us just kind of like throwing ideas out and trusting each other and scrapping still some of each other's ideas and moving in a different direction. And then we love when songs do this too, and this was a song that did that, where you finish writing the song and then you look back and you see meaning that you didn't even mm-hmm. intend, that you're like, oh, this is even better than we thought, like we didn't mean to say all this, but it says all this anyways. And so mm-hmm. we love that song because of the context in which is so personal. But then even the writing process of that song just has a lot of fond memories for us. Of like
one of our first big victories.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah,
almost the first moment of like, we can do this. That's good. Yeah.
So about what year was that song written? Was that 2017, or is that earlier?
It was earlier, actually. It was 2015, I believe. Early 2015 January or so.
So we had written a bunch of material and didn't get around to recording it for, what is that, two years or so?
Yeah,
I think we were like, we had like, the three songs we released on the EP, I think we had them in our catalog, if you will, for
a solid 2 years,
A few years, yeah.
Those were all kind of written around the same time.
And we had been like going back and forth and working with the producer that's producing our full length. And we never really landed on a sound. And so we were like, well, we just need to put something out Mm-hmm. And so we like took the acoustic versions of our songs and mm-hmm. did the video EP. And that was like, well, we're just going to do something. And that's been such a cool thing to have like in our back pocket. Also just like material for people to see. I don't even know that we were expecting it to like, I don't know, do as much as yeah. it did, but it's been like our main source of like promotional material and all that, yeah. which has been awesome. So.
Yeah, I feel like at that time we were honestly just getting a little burnt out with the production mm-hmm. process and overwhelmed more so maybe yeah, than burnt yeah. out of like, I don't know how to keep doing this and like learning the new things of production and all of that. And so we're like, let's just not do that. Let's just release these songs without any of it. And it was a refresher for us. And it just kind of reminded us like what we really want music to be about, and that's about the message in the songs. And so au fond is a French phrase for in essence, and that's why we named it that way, is we just wanted to get back to the essence of the songs, the essence of why we do music. And it really was, I think it was exactly what we needed, to be refreshed, to go back to the production process of the record and look at it again and not feel super overwhelmed by everything we were doing. Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about the new record, which is titled The Weight and the Sound, because mm-hmm. you released The Wolves in June, and then last Friday you released the title track. The Weight and the Sound, when you pair it with, you'd pair kind of the what you'd think of the name, The Weight and the Sound, with The One That Got Away, The Wolves, and then the title track. This is a record that you really don't shy away from some intense mm-hmm. topics. Yeah. So kind of go talk me through kind of the record and some of the subject matter and some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I don't know that it's a full concept record, but we definitely wanted to have some sort of like flow and journey that the record takes us on with the placement of the songs and the content and the material. It's a lot of processing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we have had music in our life mostly be used for, is processing through difficult mm-hmm. things. Not all the songs are as heavy as like The Weight and the Sound mm-hmm. and The One That Got Away, but there are a few on there with some more of that heavier material. I don't know, what would you start to?
Yeah, I feel like that song was kind of the picture for us, because it has the both and. It has that front half is all about the heaviness that you feel, so kind of like the weight is mm-hmm. is what that picture is of, like, just there's brokenness in life, brokenness within ourselves, and processing those things and some heaviness. And then the end of the song really lifts in hope of being restored and having light enter into those situations. And kind of the cacophony of sound that is happening there is the picture of what that sound is. So the weight and the sound part being kind of this like lifting in a intangible way. So there's not mm-hmm. like the direct like, this is what's happening, this is why I'm feeling better, but there's something beautiful about music that just kind of can emulate emotion. And what we wanted for that song was that latter half to have some of that, where the musicality behind it is helping represent what it just feels like to have hope in that lift. And so when we finished with that song, even just in its acoustic form, that really felt like what the whole, it just pictured the whole album. Yeah. So the album starts with a little bit more, it starts up, I think, from what I'm remembering of the songs that we have. And then it kind of slowly, it's more processing of the heavy things of just relational struggles, of depression, of those types of things. And then that title track, The Weight and the Sound, is kind of that centering point. And then there's hopefully that lift from there.
The turning point.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of been.
And then it gets into not necessarily like a conclusive ending, but like coming to terms more.
Yeah.
With things that we've walked through, and I think that's where the album ends. It's kind of a, so the Weight and the Sound title too, is it's like the duality, right? So like weight in and of itself can be a really bad thing, or it can be a really good thing in like grounding you into things, or it can be like weighing you down. Mm-hmm. And sound is the same way, where it can like inspire you, but it can also like damage your ears or like bring back bad memories. And so like the title around that is supposed to be like the both and mm-hmm. how do we like reconcile those sides of like there's good and there's bad, and they continue to clash, and I'm not sure what that means for my life or what that means for me personally, but the end of the album kind of, I think, culminates into that, like coming to terms with those things. So
I feel like most of our songs, I don't remember when we came up with this term, but It's kind of a hopeful melancholy is in the background, and whether it's like a hopeful melancholy or a melancholy hopefulness, like it's it's kind of that duality, and that's what we just see in life, is very few emotions are pure joy, very few emotions even are just pure sadness. There's this weird intricacy in our emotions and the way that we process things and feel things. Sorry, I started thinking about that one movie with the emotion bubble things where they like hit puberty and then their emotions start to being multiple colors instead of just whatever.
Yep.
That's kind of what we process is, what is that movie called? I wish I could remember. Know. Anyways, and so that's kind of our approach to writing songs, is wanting to be honest with the emotional reality of the things that we're processing and not try our best to have integrity in that and not just make it all one thing and swing to one side, but really own the wrestling that happens in processing and the back and forth. And so, even our upbeat songs have tinges of things that are difficult and challenging, and our songs that are processing some dark things hopefully have that hope in them and the uplift. So that's what we really like in music, is connecting with the humanity that we all share of intricate emotions and the way that they balance out and duel together at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned again last time we sort of chatted in last November that you went through like 20 songs for this record. How was the selection process for that and like trying to pick apart what would be, I don't know, good enough, I should say, to go on record?
That's great. Man, it's a mix. So some of it was like the songs I had come up with. So the process for us, this was just weird, writing this album. Cause I've been at home mostly just like coming up with ideas. And then we've been like working together when we had time around work and other stuff like that. But we would take ideas into the studio and work with our producer on that. And a lot of it was just like sending him ideas and he'd be like, yep, that one's cool. Or we would feel like, yes, this one is really cool. Mm-hmm. Or we feel a connection to it. A lot of it was like, we have 20 ideas or like 20 songs and then ideas around that. And there was just like a few days that we went through of like, yep, this one's not really connecting with like, I guess, where we are in this season. So like tying it back to the album title, it's this weird like nebulous thing to be like a songwriter where you like, you don't always know what you're writing about in the moment, but a lot of times, like, looking back, you can see, like, oh, this is what I was actually feeling at that point. And I think this album, in a way, was more of it finding us than us finding and choosing, if that makes any sense.
I remember getting frustrated with you even, because we would, like, pick a general idea of the songs that we wanted, and then you'd be like, oh, I wrote this new song. I'm like, no, we need to stick to the plan.
Right.
But there were just I think a good like four of the songs came after our initial like, we think this will be the set list for the record, and then we would write songs. I was like, man, this just fits, this just feels right. And so that's part of the extended process for us. I think it's been I think now it's getting close to 2 years since we started the idea of like, let's do a record. And so for some people, they can make it happen a lot faster, and hopefully even in the future we'll be able to make it happen a lot faster. But for this one, it was just really those processes of learning what songs are us and what songs are for this record. Some of them, even like, there's still songs on that list that I love, but they just weren't coming in the season. And so it was setting them aside and being like, I think this will come later, but right now, for whatever reason, like, it's just not coming to us. And so there are a couple of songs that we had to do that rough battle of like, do we fight to finish this one or do we let it rest? Because The Weight and the Sound actually was a fight to finish. That one didn't come naturally.
That's true.
But there were other ones that in that same boat, we're like, it just doesn't feel like it's time for this one. So it's a very
it's hard to explain, right?
More internal
intuition.
And then how was, because you guys finished you had a summer tour, because you guys toured most of what was the kind of, where did you tour around the country? Was it mostly the Midwest, or was it, did you guys go farther than
Pretty much the Midwest area. Yeah, we started in Wisconsin, and so we played in Milwaukee and Madison and Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we went to Rockford, and I think I'm missing one other place over there, Chicago. And then we played through a couple of spots in Iowa. We played in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City,
Des Moines,
and then went to Sioux Falls. And then we were home for a weekend.
And then we went.
Yeah, we went further south. So we played in Nebraska. We played in Lincoln when we were there.
Yep. Kansas mm-hmm. City.
And then St. Louis.
Yep. And then we went back through Iowa and ended in Wisconsin Dells for our little family vacation.
Oh,
nice.
It was great. So.
But. How was audiences? How much of the new material from the record did you play for audiences? Did you play most of it?
Yeah, we play a good deal of it. I think there's only two songs, and then we went back and forth on a mm-hmm. third one that we played at some shows and some we didn't, just depending on the fit. So it was fun to get to show those songs and to play those, especially as the Wolves released. Mm-hmm. So we released that single pretty much at the start of our tour, and so it was fun to get to take that one out on the road and just have something actually to be like, if you like this one, now we actually have it. This is great, instead of being like, just wait.
Yep.
So it was fun, and I think it just makes us eager to get to finish the record and share it with people mm-hmm. in a tangible way that they could take with them. Shows are so fun to create those memories and to create those experiences, but we're also really looking forward to being able to create a concrete, like, take this music with you, keep it. If you like it, keep listening to it. That'll be a good feeling. Yeah, that'll be fun.
For sure.
How did audiences react to the material? Was it mostly positive, or could you tell kind of how they reacted to it?
Yeah. It depended on the venue, mm-hmm. depended on
even the city. Like some of the demographics in cities are different. So.
Yeah, I felt like there's always like your best. Oh, I just hit that. Sorry.
You're good.
The best show uh-huh. of the tour and then the worst show of the tour. There were some times we played and there was like no one really paid attention. And then there were other times where like people would come and talk to us at the end and be like, man, this song like really spoke to me. And like, or they like sensed in their spirit, like, was this song about this specific mm-hmm. thing?
Yeah.
And like, that was cool. Those were some really cool moments to be like, there are people out there that are like connecting. Or they'd see like, this artist, like, I can really hear this artist in your music. Mm-hmm. It's like, yep, like totally on board with our vibe. So those are, great.
Yeah. And it was fun too. A lot of comments that we did get on the positive end were just like, we haven't heard this type of thing before. Mm-hmm. And that's something we really wanted to try and do. Creating our sound can be challenging because our different influences can sometimes feel like they don't have a middle mm-hmm. point or a meeting point. And so that's one of the biggest struggles for us, I think, is finding a meshing point of our two influences and how does that create a sound that's just makes sense but is still unique. And so to have people say like, yeah, this was really unique, and hopefully not in the like, oh, I don't know what word to use because I don't want to say it's bad. It's unique, but it generally felt like it's different.
Right.
Yeah, but it was really cool to hear people say, like, I haven't heard mm-hmm. this before, or there's something unique about your sound. A lot of people love the fact that we sing together, the duality, which is fun. I grew up doing a lot of harmonies, like, through singing worship and doing things like that. So I love vocal harmonies. And so to have people appreciate how our voices blend together, because that was also something we worked at. It wasn't the most natural at first
definitely a process.
Sing together, So that feels like a victory. And people are like, oh, man, your guys' harmonies. Good, because we've worked at those. That's great.
Well, speaking of like live stuff, one of the big things that like impressed me when I saw you guys play is the way you work in production elements mm-hmm. into your live sound. I remember at the November show was when you played the Wolves live. There's a moment where you reach, I wouldn't say it's the bridge, but there's that middle instrumental in the middle where like your guitar is feeding back and your vocals are very much pushing it to the edge right before you like the oohs.
Yeah.
But you guys were managed. It didn't fall apart. You guys were able to hit that downbeat and just launch and keep going. What was the synthesis that made you want to start adding a lot of those production elements and like the harmonizers the delays and the stuff? Because that's not something you typically see when two vocalists and acoustic guitar.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great question. I think it's a couple of things. The first one's probably boredom. I just get really bored if it's just like acoustic guitar. So it's a mix of boredom and also insecurity, because I think I don't feel confident enough as a guitar player and a vocalist to just like live on my own. You know, like there's some great vocalists and great guitar players out there. Somebody like Shaky Graves or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, who can just like, you give him a guitar and he's got this unique thing going on. And also I just like, if once you add like one piece of dynamic, it's hard not to like do it all out. And so, that's been a challenge a little bit with this album, but we wanted to just like do something different than like your classic singer-songwriter duo, acoustic, like us the duo. Like there are so many people that can put out YouTube videos like that, but if you can incorporate elements that are unique to you, and one of those things is just like soundscaping and the production that's unique to me.
In almost everything you do with music, the soundscaping and the creating something unique that's unexpected, I feel like, is what you're drawn to. So it made sense for us to try and pull that in. I remember, I think after one of our first shows, we just had a conversation of like, I don't think we're like outstanding enough as vocalists to like just have it be that. Like, I think we need something else, which has been fun. And then I think from there, it just genuinely becomes like a thing that we enjoy doing. It's fun to add something different. And I think, again, a little bit of it is that boredom piece of like, oh, we've sang these songs, like now what can we add to them? But another part of it is just appreciating that style of music. That's part of how we make the blend of some of our influences that are more electronic or ambient in those ways. We like that sound intertwining with the acoustic, and we still try and, what we try and go for is the biggest sound we can possibly create that still feels mostly organic for two people. So we don't like, for us at least, just hitting play on a track and having that run,
because
it feels like we're not creating that moment. Even if we wrote those tracks and we played on those tracks, part of the live moment feels like what's being created is happening here in this moment.
Because you build a lot of your loops and stuff right there. It's almost like an Ed Sheeran one man bang on the guitar a little bit, but it's so much more than that, because that's where you kind of see the post rock elements with the big epic kind of. Yeah, the soundscapes
builds
plus.
And yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So there's the both and of like the, I mean, obviously we're pre-programming these things. So when we play like the keyboard that I have, we have all different elements from the record that are pre-programmed in there. So the sounds, like the keys that I'm playing, they sound like electric guitar. They don't sound like just piano. So there's those things that are done in advance. But what we love is the idea of the sound that we are creating in that moment is unique to that moment. And so we experience that a lot on tour. Anytime we do live looping, it's never 100% the same. For better or for worse, we've had some great moments where it's like, that was cool. And some that were like, well, they won't know any better. That's not released yet, so they won't know that was a mistake, hopefully. But and that's just really fun for us. We like that process and the live experience that we get to create through that. So it's fun.
Yeah.
And then for this new record, do you have a release date yet, or are you keeping it secret a little
bit? Keeping it secret.
Okay.
Still trying to totally lock down some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like, I'm terrible with deadlines. And also, our producer is putting out a record with his band.
Okay.
I think they're getting it out here in October.
October 5th, I believe, is the release date.
So,
yeah.
So he's finishing up. And then Jill, the lady that we played with last night, also just put out her record. So he's been really busy, and we have a crazy summer with the tour and stuff. So the record has taken a little bit of a backseat, I think, finalizing some details, but mostly it's just mixing now. So once those tracks are full mixed, we'll get it out. So there'll be some dialogue in the next couple months about getting that light.
Yeah.
So are you still hoping for like a 2018 release date or early 2019?
It'd be nice. We shall see. Maybe it'll be a Christmas present to ourselves, or if it bleeds into 2019, that's okay too. Just being patient and make sure it's right is more important than the deadline. So
hopefully soon is what we keep
saying.
For,
Do you guys have any plans coming up? Any big shows or another tour in the works or anything? Just taking a break after.
bit of a break. And part of what we want is to have, I keep calling it Seaver's Boot Camp, just a week away where we can really talk about what do we like about the sound we've created so far? What do we want to develop and grow in our sound for the future? What type of shows do we like to play? How frequently do we want to play? How much do we like the record process? When do we want to... So basically just vision casting for Seavers. And we're definitely eager to get back to the writing stage. I think after having about a year or so playing out more and working on production and not just the writing, we're really looking forward to writing again. But yeah, before we launch into anything big, we want to kind of make sure that we've got some ideas of where we want to go and that we're on the same page with that. And
yeah. I think it's kind of like a season of introspection a little bit, just like having the summer to be like, yep, we're super busy playing shows, and now it's a time for like evaluation and reevaluating where we're gonna go. So yeah, nothing to promote. Yeah, just record's coming out sometime. So,
any final thoughts or anything?
I don't know. Yeah, we like what we're doing, and that's been fun.
Yeah,
doing music is a challenge sometimes, and especially as we look to trying to get better at being big picture and not just looking at like this year, but also thinking like, man, if we want to be doing this for 10 years, what's that journey look like, and is it possible even to do that? So. It's been, I think, a really cool thing to see Seavers develop us as people in general. Being a part of this project and looking at this has just brought so much life change and development and growth for us personally. So we're just really fond of what we get to do because of that. It helps just bring a lot of perspective to life, and it's been fun.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I mean, thanks. Anybody who's listening.
Yeah.
That supported us or is interested in our project or has been impacted by stuff that we've put out. Just say thanks for supporting us, and we're excited to keep doing what we're doing. So
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.
You can find the music of Seavers on iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp, and almost anywhere else you listen to music. Make sure you also go to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and give them a like and a follow just so you can keep up to date on news with the band. Thank you for listening to this episode. The Ear Copy Podcast is a companion to the blog of the same name. We are dedicated to shining a spotlight on almost all things Minnesota music related. You can find us at earcopy.blogspot.com for weekly articles, columns, and album reviews. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Make sure to rate, review, and share this podcast so your friends can find us. I'm Joe Keyport, and this has been the Ear Copy Podcast. I'll see you soon.